across America and around the world. Welcome to America's number one veterans radio program, Veterans Radio. Now, your host for today's program, CB himself, Gary Lilly.
Thank you, Bob, and good morning to our military out there, that thin green and blue line that's spread out all over the world, keeping not only our country free, but every country in the world that wants freedom. Welcome my veteran brothers and sisters, and welcome home. And all you folks down under, thanks for listening in. And good morning, America. I am Gary Lilly, July 1966. Sitting here in the booth with me is Dale Throneberry, the old slick pilot. Good morning, Dale.
Good morning. Yes, I'm Dale Throneberry, CW2, better known as Wally Warrant, 195th Assault Helicopter Company, Vietnam, 1969.
And a slick helicopter was one of those that carried troops, not troop guns.
We carried everything, okay. Pretty much.
Even people, big guns?
People's tiny guns, animals, everything.
And over on the control board is Bob Gould, the old paratrooper.
That's right. Thank you, Gary. 101st Airborne, 61 to 63.
Airborne all the way, right?
All the way, baby.
Okay. I don't know how you guys could jump out of those things. Anyway, there's a...
There was somebody with a size 12 boot behind you. Do I have to say more?
An old paratrooper told me one time, no, we didn't yell Geronimo. We yelled, I don't want to go.
I don't want to go.
That's a different Indian dialect.
I volunteered for this.
Yeah, right. We're going to jump right into this, Bob. You've got a great guest on the phone right now.
Well, yes, I do. But before I get to that, I wanted to just bring us up to speed. This past Thursday was the official kickoff for the film Detroit, Our Greatest Generation, being produced and directed by Mr. Keith Famey, 7-time Emmy Award recipient, winner, and it will be broadcast at the end of the year. But they had a big, big beginning, and I would say give it a launch to the film itself. This Thursday at Willow Run Airport was a gathering. One last mission, one more formation of World War II veterans. Dale, what did you observe?
I was amazed. There must have been probably somewhere in a neighborhood of close to 1,000 World War II veterans that were there, and I had goosebumps the whole time I was there. As some of you know, on the program, we've already talked about the idea of our fathers. Many of our fathers in the booth here today served in World War II, and unfortunately, they've already passed on. But as I was standing there watching these men and women, I want to make sure that I point out that there are men and women there coming off of these buses. I mean, there were busloads of these World War II guys. And they had their uniforms on, and they were standing straight as they possibly could stand. And they were so proud of what they had accomplished during their time in the military that although they came as individuals, they left as friends and comrades again. It just all came right back to them, I'm sure. And they all brought their pictures with them, and I kept talking to them about, you know, who they were, what they had done, and they'd say, oh, look, here's a picture of me then, and I'm going, who is that guy? And they go, that was me.
Now, this was a big photo shoot that took place at the Yankee Air Force in front of the B-17.
Right, the Yankee Air Museum at Willow Run Airport was a sponsor of this whole gathering, and Keith and his whole crew. I mean, just there were lots of volunteers.
That was amazing. I think what they did was amazing. I had to see this.
You guys had some great little anecdotes about things that took place. Bob, what happened when the one guy asked you, where are we going?
Yes, I was helping escort him out to the ribbon to take the photo. And one gentleman with his hat and uniform, as he's walking by, looked at me. He says, what's all this for? Where are we going? I said, well, you're going to go to re-enlist. I loved it. Re-enlist. He turned over his shoulder, said to the guy behind him, yep, we're re-enlisting. And the guy behind him, turned around on his shoulder, hey, we're re-enlisting. And they passed it on. It was beautiful. What humor. And they loved it. They loved the whole concept.
They truly did. And some of them were there in their uniforms. Some of them, there was a colonel from Plymouth in the Air Force who had been shot down over Belgium. He's going to be on our show in a couple of months, I hope, or a couple of weeks. I want to make sure I get him in there. And a number of other, I mean, we have so much material for shows coming up over the next year or so. We want to make sure we have to get these people on because their stories were amazing.
This is how I feel when I go in a VA hospital. The stories that are there, The story, and you said that Colonel looked like he was going to his recruiting booth.
Oh, he was straight. I mean, you know, the creases were in there, the shoes were shined, the hat fit correctly, and I go, how did you get into that thing? You know, because I can't. You know, it's 40 right. years and 40 pounds, I think. And he says, this is another one of their lines was, don't worry, son. As you get closer to my age, you'll be able to fit in the clothes you wore when you were in your 30s. And I'm going, oh, I don't know if I like that or not.
Right.
But it was true. There were Navy guys in their, I mean, the full bell-bottom pants and everything else. And one thing I wanted to quickly point out was as they were getting off of their buses and vans, they were escorted down a red carpet. And on each side, there was an honor guard of current military men and women standing in uniform, saluting and shaking hands with them. It was inspiring.
Special.
I mean, I can feel the tears, you know, welling up again as you watch that. And they were so excited to see these young kids, as they call them. And there were, Bob, remember how many times we heard dad or mom,
mom,
you know, over this way or over this way, or even grandpa. They brought their grandkids with them. And you could see, you know, we always think that the kids today, just like every generation, oh, they don't care and stuff. They were just as awestruck as we were.
We're going to find out a little bit later how the kids feel about it, because that's what today's program is about. Bob.
Yes, and I want to say one more time, this was the kickoff, the official kickoff of the movie Detroit, Our Greatest Generation. And we have as our guest on the line, how's that for a segue, Dale?
Excellent. Mm. Yeah, you learned that in broadcasting school.
We have Ms. Tracy Frink. And Tracy is the events coordinator for the Yankee Air Museum. Tracy, welcome this morning to Veterans Radio.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, what were some of your observations and how did you feel with the turnout?
We were blown away with the turnout. We had 380 people that had actually pre-registered. So to sit there and look at a hangar full of about 1,100 people was quite amazing that we, you know, were able to reach those numbers. And it was amazing to the veterans that were there. We had heard several comments from several of the vets. I didn't realize there were this many of us left.
Oh, wow. So, in other words, there was a lot of people who had not pre-registered that showed up.
Correct. Correct. And like I said, just listening to those vets looking around and reminiscing and just seeing, you know, hearing that we didn't realize there were that many of us left was just, that broke my heart.
It does break your heart, Tracy, and I want to thank the Yankee Air Museum also for sponsoring that program. As I said earlier, we have to make sure that we get out and get these men and women's stories, because they're going away at 1,500 a day or more now, and we have to capture that. And I congratulate Keith on what he's doing.
Classic.
We have a living history department at the museum, and we have appointments scheduled pretty much for most of this year, and we're trying to do exactly that, is capture these people's stories so that they can be remembered, and that's the whole purpose of, you know, the Yankee Air Museum.
Well, I think that's something that we need to get together and coordinate, because we can direct people toward you, and maybe we can even help out with those recordings.
That would be amazing.
Tracy, why don't you give us that website where they can find out about the film? Are there also photographs available that they can get on the web of the event that just took place?
Steve, I'm getting copies of the pictures hopefully today, and we'll get those up on our website, which is www.yankeeairmuseum.org. And for the movie, there's a link to the movie website from our website as well. But if you want to go straight to the movie's website, it's www.DetroitGreatestGeneration.com.
Tracy, we've got about a minute. What else do you have online, ready to go as an encore?
We'll be hosting the premiere for the movie, hopefully on October 3rd. That's our target date as of right now, and that will take place in another hangar at Willow Run as well. So we'll get that B-17 flying to promote the film and bring some veterans in again down a nice red carpet to just show them how much we truly do appreciate them.
Dale, do you have something else?
You know, time constraints always jump in on us all the time on this program. But I would encourage people to go to the Yankee Air Museum website to see the photographs of these men and women. Again, it was astonishing to see there were nurses, that had served in the Pacific. There were nurses that had been on airplanes that would fly the wounded back and forth from England and from the Pacific, in addition to being our local author, Margaret McGregor, who had, you know, was a nurse that followed, as she says, followed the troops across North Africa and Europe and everything else and helping them out. And they were right in it all the time. I just thought it was amazing.
And we want to say welcome home to everyone.
Absolutely. Tracy, we'd like to have you back on the program again to keep us updated on the film. And, well, mission accomplished. A job well done from all of us here at Veterans Radio. We'll be right back.
You have honorably served the United States and the Marine Corps in times of peace and war. Now we would like to serve you. The Marine Scholars Program covers the total cost of attending Ave Maria University. By combining resources from the Ave Maria University Marine Scholars Fund Bank, federal financial aid entitlements, and the GI Bill, the benefits are granted for the duration of the recipient's study at Ave Maria University, contingent upon good conduct and good academic standing. The Marine Scholars Program is open to all reserve and active component Marines and other combat veterans of Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom who have honorably served our country. Please visit us online at www.avemaria.edu or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. You helped us. Now let us help you. Semper Fi.
And we're back on Veterans Radio. And this morning I'm really pleased to welcome a student, teacher from Pioneer High School and three of his students. Now, Brent Richards is a teacher of American Studies, amongst other things, at Pioneer High School in Ann Arbor, and has the Vietnam veterans in on a regular basis once a year to talk about the experiences. And so we talked about it and said, hey, why don't we get some of the students on here and tell us what they thought about the program that was put on about a week or two ago. And so this morning we also have Laura Adams, Hannah Alexander, and Mari Issa. Welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you.
Thanks.
You're welcome. Brent, how long have you been teaching about the Vietnam War, amongst other American history studies?
This is my eighth year teaching American Studies or American History at Pioneer, and it will be also my eighth year teaching about the Vietnam War.
How did you happen to start bringing in Vietnam veterans?
It must have been maybe the second year that I was teaching. I've always thought that it would be interesting to have different perspectives in the classroom about some of the things that we teach about, but a lot of the things that I do teach about, especially going back in history, we don't have so many living witnesses to that history. Well, Vietnam is one of those things, obviously, that we do have lots of living history or living witnesses for. And so I actually just randomly called, I think out of the yellow pages or out of the phone book, the VFW, and asked if they might be able to put me in contact with some veterans, and John Kinzinger was that man.
Good deal. John is a great organizer and won so many awards for his veterans' activities. Laura Adams, when we had this the class, what we do now is have classrooms, come in and stay in the auditorium for three periods. Is that what it is, Brent?
Right.
Okay. Rather than have classes come and go and come and go, it's for three periods. The classes are combined, and you hear eight veterans. And we set it up chronologically from somebody that was there at the very, very beginning to somebody that was there at the very, very end, because Vietnam veterans will tell you it's like there were two different wars. There was the war up until the Tet Offensive, in which the morale was high and everybody was out to win, and then they started hearing on the media, the news, that the war can't be won from Walter Cronkite and others, and so it became who wants to be the last person to die in Vietnam, and morale went down. Laura, what did you think about this perspective? Did you pick up on different stories, different attitudes as the veterans spoke?
Well, I actually wasn't there the day that the vets came, but but I heard so many stories from when that happened that it felt like I was there. I heard stories about how some vets went through horrible ordeals and answered very honestly about those events, and it was really cool to hear that people went through the stories that are usually only seen in movies or read about in books.
This is, for a minute, it caught me by surprise, but this is even more interesting. You went there and you heard your friends talk about it.
Yeah.
You know, friend to friend, and you got their perspectives. Hannah, what did you think? You were there, weren't you?
I was there, yes.
Okay. What did you think as the students, as the questions were asked or as the people talked about their experiences?
I really enjoyed the experience a lot. I felt that we don't learn a lot about the Vietnam War. We usually learn about it as a whole. And I think that each Vietnam vet has such a different story, and they all have gone through such different experiences that it almost makes it as 8 different wars as opposed to them all fighting the same war. So to hear such different perspectives all throughout the same war, I thought that was very interesting.
Mari, you were there for the entire class. What did you think?
Well, I was there the whole time. I thought it was extremely interesting. To add on to what Hannah was saying, I feel like when we learn about history, about wars, other wars, in class, it's a war on a book, it's in a movie, it's on a television show, a documentary, and being able to see and listen to and ask questions to all the veterans, it just made it so much more personal, and it was so interesting to hear all the different perspectives because of all the different people.
In my real life, I'm a real estate broker, a commercial real estate broker, and I tell everybody all the time, we're all in the same business. We're in the people business. That the product changes, the mechanics change, and it's the same thing about wars. It's a people story. It's not maps and dates and politics and all that. It's people's people stories. Laura, did you have any preconceived notions? You weren't there, but what your friends might think about it who were there?
Yeah, actually, last year we watched a lot of Vietnam videos through class and on my own time. And through the videos, Hollywood, I assume, really emphasized the drug use in Vietnam and the violence and all sorts of actions that went on. And so before my friends went to the 3-hour long discussion, they told me that they also had these preconceived notions that the veterans had drug addictions or real battle scars to show.
Hannah, what about you?
I have a similar preconceived notions, but also from what I understand, the Vietnam War drafted every kind of person. They drafted people who already had previous substance abuse and they were addicts. So I definitely thought that there are some people in the war that were addicts and there are some people that weren't. But also from what I understand, or what I had thought before, was that most Vietnam vets were traumatized and physically traumatized as well. I'd seen many with amputations, many with long-lasting
You've
physical
done
effects.
Volunteer work at the VA hospital?
I have done volunteer work in physical therapy.
God bless you.
So I have seen, I've talked to many vets who have a lot of stories, and they come back with a lot of trauma and a lot of post-traumatic stress disorder.
There's a lot of that, and sometimes it shows and sometimes it doesn't. By the way, you guys are all 11th graders, right?
Yes.
Okay, so it's really amazing that you're doing that volunteer work. Mari, did the impression that you may have had, or did you have a preconceived impression before the class?
Well, as I was saying before, a lot of what I have personally heard or learned about the Vietnam War is through books and through movies, so I think it's pretty apparent that Hollywood makes it into a hyperbole of what actually happened. I think a lot of the time we see the Vietnam vets who have amputations or who are, as Hannah said, emotionally traumatized. So it was really nice to see that there are people who have learned to deal, well, they're obviously still dealing with it, but it was interesting to see people who aren't the stereotype.
Were there any stories that stuck with you?
With me personally?
Yes.
I actually thought the nurse who came, she's the only woman there, and I tuned into that. And I thought her experience just was, it was also incredible in its own way, because she wasn't necessarily fighting, but she was, for all intents and purposes, a civilian who was helping to care for these
right.
people.
They did not they did not fight, but there are very few people that experienced trauma as much as the nurses did. How about you, Hannah? What did you think of her story?
I really enjoyed her stories. One that sticks out for me was that when she talked about her trip home, she was in the airport and she had to discard her uniform because she would have been spat on or frowned upon by the public. So that's something that really stuck in my head.
Did it? There were a lot of stories about coming home. Did that catch any of you guys by surprise? The treatment that the Vietnam vets received? Mari?
Well, I think we were talking about it in class. Mr. Richards, we had this whole discussion about it, about how they weren't well received when they came home. But it's so different than today, because the people who are coming home from Iraq, we are taught, you know, never to let Vietnam happen again, that we need to welcome our troops home. So it's so incredible that that happened to us, because we're used to a place where the soldiers are welcomed home, we thank them, we're grateful for their service.
How about you, Laura? Have you ever met any troops coming home and thank them?
I actually have never met any troops in the airport or getting to or from places, but I've seen troops downtown, like at near the university, and I haven't actually thanked them, but I always feel grateful for what they've done.
That's pretty nice. And if you thank them, they'll feel really good about it. Did either any of you guys know any Vietnam vets in your lifetime before the classes? Did you have any grandfathers? It used to be fathers. Now I'm hearing of friends of mine that are great-grandfathers. Did any of you have a grandfather that was in Vietnam War? No?
I didn't actually have a family member who was in Vietnam, but because I volunteered at the VA, there were many patients that were regulars, so I got to talk with them and know more of their personal stories. So I like to think that I know them, but they're not family or anything.
Did they open up to you at all?
Yes, many of them did. Several of them had dementia and other, like Alzheimer's and other kind of illnesses, so it was more difficult to speak with them, but others were very social and had a lot of things to tell, especially since they had been suppressing all of their experiences for so long.
One of the guests was a helicopter pilot. Dale Thronberry, part of Veterans Radio, was a helicopter pilot, and he talked about being shot down. One of the other guests was a helicopter pilot and told the story about his company losing 21 helicopters in one day, and he lost two himself. They made it back to the base each time, but they weren't flyable after that. Did any of you guys pick up on that? Because we up on the stage, we really enjoy hearing each other's stories, and we were sitting there kind of with our mouths hanging open.
I found it rather fascinating that it is still possible to land a helicopter after it has been bombed or after some explosion has happened. So I had no idea that that was even possible. So that was pretty fascinating for me.
Yeah, that was Dale. He was shot down twice, and he tells the story about the engine quitting at 1,500 feet and not being scared, because that's when the training kicks in and you start reacting automatically. Brent?
I have to agree with Hannah. I did not know you could land a helicopter after it had lost power, so that story really stuck out with me. But Dale has been in the program at Pioneer in the past several times. I think he's been there maybe every year or every year except for one. And his stories of rescue missions where they're coming in with the helicopters into the jungle, where the rotors of the helicopters are literally clipping the tops of the trees while they pull people out of fire zones, and all the while they're getting fired at. So amazing stuff to hear those stories from people like Dale. And I think it always kind of brings to life some of the things that maybe we see in movies but don't necessarily attach to or relate to.
There were a lot of guys that used those rotors as weed whackers to open up a hole so that they could get in. If there was a wounded guy down there, those helicopter pilots did everything in their power to get him out. And some of the stories are astounding. Dale's got a story which I can't get him to tell on the air, but absolutely astounding. What about the fact that some guys started off over on the right, our right, your left, was the guy that was there very early on, who was in the Battle of the Iodrang Valley, LZ X-ray, that the movie was made from. We were soldiers, and all the way over to our nurse, who was there at the very last person there. Did you guys pick up any difference in the stories or the attitudes at all, Mari?
Well, I think there was. It was interesting because it seemed like everyone was similar ages. Not everyone, but most people. But they were all there at different times. And, you know, the people, some of the people towards the end, it seemed like were getting a bit more, they were a bit more subdued when they were talking about the war. It seemed that they saw more deaths and that it affected them even more. Of course, the deaths affect everyone, but especially towards the end, I sort of started noticing that people seem to be very affected by it.
If you have a friend die and it seems like it's for something, it may be a little easier to take than if your friend dies and it feels like it's for nothing. How about you, Hannah?
One of the men made a comment about movies in Hollywood about the war as like Platoon or We Were Soldiers or Apocalypse. And he said that many men would say that 90% was Hollywood and 10% was real, or 10% was Hollywood and 90% was real. And he also made a comment that what one person experienced, someone else may have not, but what one person didn't experience, someone else had. So at each part where one person may have thought that that was all made up from Hollywood, another man would have actually experienced it. So I thought that was interesting.
I found that was pretty interesting, too. That's the one thing that I've learned over the years, that the war was so long and so spread out that you really don't have to make anything up. I mean, these things are that happen are really, really bizarre at times. And I've talked to guys that, see, one of the things that we didn't talk about, I learned about going to conventions, I figured it out on my own, or reunions, is that after a while you begin to doubt that something happened. And if you say it enough, pretty soon you start listening to yourself and you say, well, that's not believable. And I talked to some friends about it, and they said the same thing, that going to a reunion, you sort of say something in a way that's joking that you can back out of real easily if people look at you and say, what, are you nuts? But when they say, yeah, and they add on another detail to it, you think to yourself, my gosh, it really did happen. I'm not going nuts. That's one of the things that the people don't understand about reunions. We didn't talk about it in the class, but I'll throw that out there right now. Laura, what is your impression with the class, the talk afterwards, your friends, the teachers, and all of that? Do you think this is something that was a good program to learn for young people?
Oh, definitely. I mean, besides getting rid of stereotypes or anything like that, it's so interesting to hear different stories and to hear what people have to say about this, about wars, because it's what's really going on. It's the truth, and you can't really make that up.
As I said a minute ago, you don't have to make anything up, because the things that happen are so remarkable. Hannah, did you ever have we're all old guys sitting up there right now, and she's not old, our nurse, if you're listening. To you guys, we're really, really old. Did you ever try to picture us when we were only about a year or two older than you guys?
Actually, when you showed they showed a video, and they had actual pictures of you guys when you had been in the war, you with your uniform on, or you walking around the whatever it was. And I tried to put the name with a face, but I have to praise you for, after suppressing so many stories for so long, being able to share them. And for us, it's much different hearing from a primary source as it is from reading from a book.
So. And we're, believe it or not, this first segment is winding down real fast. And we're going to be going to a break, and when we come back, we're going to be talking about to Brent Richards more about these programs and what you think, if you can recommend it to other teachers. You're listening to Veterans Radio, and we'll be right back right after these messages.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them. Seaman John Catherwood defended his leader even though he could not stand. Details after this.
I know what you're going through.
I've been there.
Nobody else I know has been there.
It's not easy being a veteran.
Coming back from Iraq or Afghanistan, I had been so excited to come home.
But it's harder than I thought.
Not everyone understands that.
Things at home may be as you left them.
But you don't feel the same.
Join us at communityofveterans.org.
And connect to others who are going through the same thing.
Because no one knows what it's like to come back unless they were there.
Brought to you by Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
Attached to the USS Pam Pang, Catherwood was one of a shore party moving in to capture Mundang on the Philippine Islands on the morning of 24 September 1911. Advancing with a scout party to reconnoiter a group of huts close to the trail, Catherwood unhesitatingly entered the open area before the huts, where his party was suddenly taken under point-blank fire and charged by approximately 20 enemy coming out of the native huts and from other concealed positions. Struck down almost instantly by the outlaws' deadly fire, Catherwood, although unable to rise, rallied to the defense of his leader and fought desperately to beat off the hostile attack. The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.